Hello and welcome to the Not So Secret Source podcast, where we open source the secret source. My name is Andile Masuo, head of community here at Founders Factory Africa, and I am rolling heavy. For this episode, I have an incredible founder of a business called Pulus. Her name is Okpe. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Andy.
Fantastic. And of course, I have my colleague from the venture design team at Founders Factory Africa, Eunice. What's happening?
Fine, man. Thank you so much, Andy.
Yeah, man. So we're here to talk about building in Lagos, building in Nigeria, and I suppose contextually building on a continent that is now just drawing the attention of a global audience at a time when, generally speaking, there's less money to go around. And certainly there are more fundamentals being demanded of founders. And
yeah.
It's not the greatest or easiest time to start a business.
No, it's not. Maybe I should have done it 2021.
You know what I mean? You would have been swimming in that dough. But, you know, before you tell us a little bit about what you're building right now, like reflect on you being an entrepreneur in the first place. You know, what was that journey like? Where does it suddenly occur to you that this is something you could do for a living, and this is something you'd actually build a life around?
Oh well, that's for me. It goes back to when I was in the uni. I was into graphics design, Corel Draw, and I was in a committee.
Okay, so Corel Draw is taking us back.
Yeah, like, I mean,
that's taking us way back.
So what are we
in the 2000 and...
Sometime 2008, 2009.
So yeah. Canva wasn't a thing back then.
No. Didn't see it in my dream.
The Canva founder was being born. No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were a graphic designer?
Yeah.
So, at Varsity?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, people would come to say, oh, we want to have a certificate for our faculty members. And could you do? I'm like, okay, I could do one for like 50 naira, then 100 naira. And when the money comes, I'm like, okay, this is cool. Fast forward to in my final year, I did a sticker for sale, sent it to some people in other departments. Told them, okay, I'll sell to you at 30 naira, you sell at 50, but you don't sell more than 50. Huh? And I still sell at 50 to some people. And it was cool money. And, you know, I was studying engineering physics, a course I chose because I thought that maybe one day I would work at the National Aeronautical Space Agency.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, but I think it was in my third year, I knew, okay, let's just get on with this and be done with it and move on to other things. And I started doing like ad catalogs, you know, businesses were advertising, you know, on these ad catalogs, and they would pay for spaces and would distribute it around. I was employing my classmates rather, and I was paying them. So fast forward, fast forward to after school, I went into business development. I mean, for me, it was not an option. We were done with engineering physics. And I went into business development. Then I got married, and my husband was into agriculture, and everything just changed.
What's he, a farmer?
Yeah, he grew up in a farming household. So he was doing it. I mean, he was selling chicken, selling eggs. And, you know, I was just like, he was doing it as just farming. I'm like, no, this could be a business. And
yeah. So let's talk about the family. Could you touch on family? Because what's the family saying when you are forsaking the sciences and this trajectory of being at a space agency?
Yeah, well, for me, my family had not always been... It's just about what you want to do. I mean, once you're happy doing it. I'd always wanted to do computer because I remember my final year, my internship was actually in a tech company where I wrote PHP, wrote codes, you know, built a software. It was like something like a chatting site. So at the point when I was going to get into school, it only took me like a week to decide that, okay, maybe I could learn computer outside of the classroom, but I can't learn engineering physics. And he just took a call to my dad to say, oh, I'm no more doing computer. And he was like, are you sure you want to do, that's what you want to do? And that was it. So I didn't come from a household where, oh, this is what you have to do. This is what you have to do.
Yeah.
I think my parents really gave us that leverage to choose what you want. And once you're fine with it, that's it.
There is the stereotype of like the African parent, the Nigerian parent.
Not the African parent.
The prescriptive parent. Like reflecting on that and your experience in like your trajectory to becoming a venture builder, a venture building support proponent for founders. Mm-hmm. How much of that could you have predicted early on? Like, and how much of this is mm-hmm. an embodiment of like maybe a dream or something you set in motion early on?
I think for me, my story was pretty much different. If anyone had said to me that, look, someday I'll be supporting founders, I would have said it's a lie. Because I had my degree in accounting from University of Lagos, and all I wanted to be was to just go into banking.
With a first class.
Yeah. So there's overachievement all over this pod.
I just wanted to like get into banking, yeah. you know, suit and tie, yeah. be the coolest kid
really?
On
suit
the block,
and tie.
Yeah.
travel and just make some money. Yeah, yeah. So it's actually interesting how much I've grown over time. Like, I know founders, they try to solve problems, but then I look at them like, okay, maybe founders are those that are so scared to take a job in corporate. Yeah. And look at how life has done me, right? Mm. So, it was always like,
wait a minute, whoa, let's slow down. You looked at founders and thought, oh, these people are afraid to come for these
yeah,
ivory
exactly.
towers.
And I think that also depends on like the educational system yeah. in Nigeria. Like, it's more on the traditional career mm-hmm. route than
job.
Entrepreneurship. Mm. So then I didn't really know so much about entrepreneurship. Yeah. Like the early part of my career, I was in corporate finance, doing stuff in deal making and just raising money for large corporates. Mm-hmm. And for me, I just sat down someday and I'm like, I don't think this is impact to me, right? Because fine, I did raise money for this large client, which I'm unable to disclose, mm-hmm. but a couple of like blue chips companies in Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And I was like, because can these guys actually do it without me? And the answer is yes. So that particular impact was limiting to me. And I thought I wanted to venture into another thing. And I then took my postgrad fellowship in technology, entrepreneurship and design. And that was the beginning of my journey mm-hmm. into the entrepreneurial phase. Like it was a lot of things as well. Tried to build a venture in sustainability, which was more like a school project. And that really opened my mind to the possibilities of entrepreneurship. And I said to myself, look, I wasn't going to go back to the traditional corporate finance and I want to support founders, just be a part of their journey and see how I can activate those. Then post that, I started out with a venture capital firm in Nigeria. I did about 2 years, move around in research, investment, and founder success. And the best of my
that
experience
was Future Africa, right?
Future Africa.
Yeah.
And the best of my experience was in founder success. Actually, like being able to think through problems with founders, you know, using my finance experience, research, and strategy to how they can go to the next phase. And I saw the opportunity at Founders Factory Africa for venture building.
And we thank Future Africa for nurturing
multi-talented people like okay.
Thank you, Future Africa, for nurturing our colleague and letting us,
letting
him serve in another part of the ecosystem.
Yeah, actually, we're all building for the ecosystem.
We're all building
you know?
The same one.
So regardless of whatever fund
we're
you
all
are,
winning.
It's all
I mean,
about
but we're
pushing
grateful
Africa
here,
forward.
You are particularly grateful.
Oh, I am.
Yeah, Oka is grateful I'm here. I'm also grateful that I am here.
That's amazing. Yeah. So that's actually a great segue to me asking what it is in what you did choose to study at university that you found most useful and applicable. What would you point to as your path has obviously deviated significantly from what any of your professors might have thought you would do. Mm. But what have you found useful, perhaps even surprisingly?
I think analytical skills.
Uh-huh.
But for lack of better words, I did a course in my third year, abstract physics, something about that. And we're looking for a Schrodinger cat. And I never understood that course. I mean, but I passed it either way. I think it just helped me to be able to think beyond what I can see.
Okay.
Maybe in the business world, you say think like there's no box.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we were about 3 or 4 female in my class.
Wow.
It was a male-dominated course. And I stopped seeing, I don't see myself as like a female in the men's world, in the men's world. So it's always been, I think I was class rep for like, then I stepped down to be assistant because I was doing entrepreneur. And
you didn't have time for everything.
I didn't have time for everything. Mm. So for me, it's always been, I never really, I don't always see myself as maybe being disadvantaged.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole landscape of that department, the faculty, and the courses and every other thing just built me to be more resilient.
Mm. And that's a fascinating point you make because there's something also about how the reality, even in VC and certainly in founding businesses, is that mm-hmm. you are an outlier. In a sad way, that's the reality. You being a founder, period. You being, a tech founder, period. Mm-hmm. You being a woman building in agri-tech.
Yeah.
That's even more like outlier stuff. But it had never occurred to me that you wouldn't see that that you are not oriented to sort of sense that gap because you, I don't know, would you say it's your socialization? Is it your family's upbringing that you never really sensed, oh, I'm the only woman here. You just kind of just worked through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it, mm-hmm. you know, I think my experience both entrepreneur wise and even career wise, mm-hmm. I see the fact that, you know, there ain't enough women here mm-hmm. doing things. But when it comes to like my personal thing and what I'm doing, I think that whole mindset mm-hmm. and, you know, when I get to a place, I always find a way to not if either subconsciously, mm-hmm. you know, I just come up. You know, I just come up. I'm just known. I just knew, except I don't want to do it. If I want to do that thing, then it has to be good.
Oh, man. All right. So fascinating. Let's pick.
Yeah.
If
I can also quickly jump in here, like I've been supporting Okbe with Apollo's concept, Adventure Design, for about 2 months ago. And it has been really interesting. Okbe can execute. Okbe moves very fast and deliver quality results. I think for me, it's also like an interesting trait to see in a woman founder like that. And I'm very bullish about women founders in my experience working with founders as a go. I feel like women founders are very, very interested in the sectors they are ideating in. And you see that play out in the way they think about problem and the way they position what they are building. So I just...
Shout out to you. No, and I mean, look, I'm a fan and I'm just fresh to this party. And I'm having it for a couple of days. I mean, so full disclosure, just a few days ago, you were in this very boardroom pitching using the screen to a room full of people in this room and also mm-hmm. joining virtually. Our investment committee is currently deliberating on whether or not your startup Pulus, it warrants us inducting it into our portfolio and backing it with your first pre-seed check.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you feel like? What bubbles to the surface for you in terms of that experience? Maybe transport us back into that room and the emotions. But also maybe the what we've been talking about also plays there where you're not terribly self-aware of like how rare it is for you to be in that position.
This was a bit of an exception.
Really? I'm thinking maybe you rolled in here and you were like, yeah, I'm just going to solve this the way I've solved most things.
I think it was like 30 seconds in and I just ran to the washroom. Uh-huh. And I'm like, okay, you got this. I mean, looking back, it was a very refreshing experience. Mm-hmm. For me, it's been like 2 months.
Yeah.
And I'd say that without the support that we got or that I got from the venture design team, I don't know how that would have happened. Mm. Something coming into the GenF program for me, so I've been a poultry farmer for like what? So 10 years. Mm-hmm. I know the industry. So when I came into the GenF, mm-hmm. I knew there wasn't any mistake about what I knew about the poultry industry, mm-hmm. interactions with farmers. So I've got a career. I had a career in development where I worked with a couple of development projects that are targeted towards farmers, mm-hmm. livelihood improvement, access to finance. So it looks like maybe you would say I know my onions when it comes to that. But coming into GenF, I knew that there was a difference between knowing what you're doing and trying to build a venture backable business with that thing. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that, you know, the venture design team at mm-hmm. GenF has helped me to see. Mm. So, you know, there are times when Eunice is talking and I'm like, I wish I could talk like that about what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, the team really know, they know how to feed everything in. And it just helps to, it's like it fills that gap of that thing that you came in with. And mm-hmm. it just fills the gap of all the spaces. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know where I would have been if not here.
Look at all these compliments flying left and right.
No, really, really. No, and this is not supposed to be like
this is definitely not advertorial.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. It's not. I keep telling them. Yeah. I have been saying it. I've been singing it like a song. Yeah, like for me, it's almost like, you know, take this, put it in, and it just fits.
Yeah.
That's it. So I know the business. I know poultry. I know, but this is a different ball game now. I've done SME for how many years? Mm-hmm. This is not an SME. Mm. This is a higher ball game. Mm. And they've just helped to, you know, fill those gaps.
Oh, my word.
They are helping to fill those gaps.
You know what? I'm also realizing there are negative stereotypical attitudes that people have towards corporate or towards entrepreneurship. So corporates looking at entrepreneurship going, we're up here, you would never cut it here. Or like entrepreneurs going, you and your ivory tower, like, what do you know?
Yeah.
And really, I think what I've come to learn at Founders Factory Africa is that there is so much to be gained in having that multidisciplinary and diverse background and experience merged to serve founders in the same place. So there's something to be said for the experience you got, you know, in those corporate halls.
Yeah, exactly.
That bring a sense of like, how do you present, make a business case to sort of corporate money?
Yeah.
How do you structure a business opportunity, not just for business owners who are looking to source eggs and poultry products, but to a whole world of scale and potential that could be someone in Zimbabwe you've never met, but using your platform. It's a very different sensibility that often requires like all of us to come together with, you know, the entrepreneurial side, the consulting backgrounds, the corporate, you know, the straight up suits, the, you know, banking industry types, you know, venture development, VC. I really do see that as what we're doing here at Founders Factory Africa.
Yeah, maybe if I can quickly jump in there as well regarding how that looks like for us at Venture Design in piloting Gen F. I mean, I've been here for about 5 months. And
doesn't even look like
so
that.
So Pulus is part of like the early concept, the first concepts actually I'm working on with the venture design team at Founders Factory. And for us, we really understand that founders at that early stage, they need a partner to work with them to think around scale, to think around venture backability, right? And how investors look at that. I mean, if you look at the ecosystem in general, there are different programs targeted at founders. But from our experience actually investing and building concepts ourselves at FFA, we do believe that we sit on a lot of data and insights that can be useful to founders. And the fact that, like a 60 plus colleagues, right, you are able to like really tap into that diverse experience and multidisciplinary background, for example. In our case, we've got someone in my team from banking and years of building ventures. Like
so that would be like Malani?
Programs as well. Yeah, Malani comes from banking, over 15 years of experience in banking as
shout
well.
Shout out to her, capable leader.
Shout out to Malani.
Shout out to Malani.
for the amazing work you're doing leading the venture design team. And also we've got Amara as well, ex-founder. She's built healthcare, built like an auto business as well. And also my colleague Sona in programs, you know, projects
former founder as well.
And the former founder built EdTech. And me, like the typical finance guy, I come with like numbers.
This is our suit.
Does he make money? No, if he doesn't make money, it doesn't make sense, right? And also the way you position your business, because like I've got like tons of experience writing proposals for companies as well. When I was in corporate finance as well, I remember we had to work on building like a mutual fund, write a lot of this to SEC. I know that a lot of times founders really have like the Security and Exchange Commission in Nigeria to be
not
like
all of us are suits. We don't know these words.
So, like in my experience, I feel like what we've seen at Gen F is that founders have a lot of ideas. They kind of understand the problem, but the solution positioning is really something they struggle with. Founders want to solve all of the thing at every
once.
Single time, right? Which they intend to conflict. So what we'll do is bring them into the program. We'll spend like the first month really helping them to find an understanding of, you know, define the problem, the solution, hypothesis, and really unpacking that opportunity in that particular space. And then we use our design thinking lens, our experiences building business, and our diverse like skills together to really hit that white space where we believe there's an opportunity and we can get like venture backability and prepare the founder as well. And then in the third month, we start preparing you for like the investment process. We feel like for us, right, the interesting thing about Gen F is the risk access to entrepreneurship. For example, someone like Okwe as a woman founder, we all know what the starter out there. I don't want to keep blabbing. But really creating this easy access for founders where they can come like test with us whether this will work, this would not work. We also understand the nuances of the African economy, like limited income and all of that. A lot of founders don't have like the money to really go to market and test whether an idea would work. So we'll bring them in, give them tests.
And the irony, of course, when you go to market without that testing, it's such an expensive way to learn. That's the irony, of course, right?
Yeah, it then means that like a lot of times you find like businesses struggle through scale, through the value of debt, and then they're unable to make it to Series A. That's actually because they've not validated whether that problem actually exists and whether customers are willing to pay for what they're building, right? And those are the key questions we want to answer with Gen F. And then bringing founders such that when we end up even backing them, we continue to provide that support at Founders Factory with our studio team?
I just realized as you're talking, two words come to mind. One is like prioritization and timing, you know, because, you know, something you said there where, and something actually you said too, okay, that having founded things before, being a founder myself, you don't always have the clearest sense of what's most important. So you have a sense of everything that's important, but you don't always have the most the sharpest sense of what to prioritize, what's more important than the other, and when to focus on what. And I think what I've observed so far in interacting with you and the team at Carbon Africa is this, there's this confidence of not just what, of understanding and articulating what's important, but what's most important and when to focus on what. And I wonder, maybe as a segue to talking about the business itself, of all the problems you can be solving in ag tech, right? Of all the problems you'd be solving as a poultry farmer turned, you know, tech entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Why this one? Maybe as an entree to helping us understand what you're building and why.
So for me, it was more like a growth realization. I'd said earlier about doing the business, selling chickens, supplying chickens to outlets.
And how? Yeah. What scale? Give us a sense of like how big you've been playing.
This started from like a 500 to 1,000 poultry farm capacity to up to like 65,000. Yeah.
So this is not exactly small fry.
It's not backyard farming.
It is not backyard farming.
Yeah.
You're a boss already.
I was.
Oh, you were.
Fish, you were.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was like, okay, you've got a supply, you've got a demand, right? And you need to meet that demand with supply of chickens, but you can't do that. Number one, because driving an SME in Nigeria is about, you're looking at what's your revenue, what's your margin, what's your profit and the likes. When it comes to ag tech, when it comes to, you're talking about scale, you know, scalability, you're talking about ways to customer acquisition cost, you know, all of those things. So at some point, it became difficult to meet the demand, you know, with the SME. And then I had to start aggregating chickens from other farmers. And then it looked like there are farmers who are producing chicken. That's not, this shouldn't be ad. But man, it was hard. So it was difficult, either disappointments, you know, but in that disappointments, I was hearing
stories
from the farmers meeting up with, you know.
So you're like, hey, I need some chickens.
Yeah, I'm going to need some chicken, maybe say a week. I'm going to need some chicken 2 weeks. And then we're like, oh, yeah, I've got some birds. I'll sell to you. And then I go in 2 weeks and I'm like, okay. And they're like, I didn't have money again. Someone came and I had to sell.
You couldn't pick up the phone.
I couldn't.
You couldn't text me.
So it was a lot of things. There's someone that used to buy from me. But then I met farmers who have been doing this. You see like an empty pen and like, why, you know, take some birds. And like, no, the last person that came, over 400,000 naira worth of birds. That's like up to like $1,000 then, you know, bought from me, didn't pay. His number is switched off. I can't reach him. Started hearing all of these stories. And it was becoming...
You brought your truck knowing you weren't going to pay?
They do that.
Wow.
And you tell them you'll come back to pay them.
Yes, to come back.
Wow.
Come back. Or they just come, they select. So you see a farmer who has like, say, 1,000 chicken. Someone comes, select the big ones, say, take 200. And it takes like... So maybe it remains like 50. And this farmer is... At that point, the farmer is tired and is... So the neighbor just comes and say, just take it, whatever you want to. So that farmer is not able to say, did you make profit? Did you make loss? When that money comes in, he just says, okay, I would still go and buy
at least.
So they're not growing. Someone has been doing like 200, 200, 200, maybe sometimes even drops. And because of the Nigerian landscape, people feel there's this perception that during the festive period, everybody wants to eat chicken. So when it's not festive, the getting the supply is difficult because farmers say, oh, it's not festive, so there isn't going to be demand. And then they're
all piling on the festive season, and then there's oversupply.
And then they sit back.
So I started seeing all of these problems, and I'm like, okay, I think there's a bigger problem beyond. And for me, I mean, scaling SME in Nigeria is also like, is a big challenge. It was a function of, do I build more pens to accommodate? And that's even a funding thing, you know? So if someone is going to... Exactly. And someone is going to put... at a point I was close to accessing about 200 million in finance, in debt finance.
Yeah.
And then a lot of things happened in security, and it was just, so I started saying, maybe there's a bigger problem I should look at.
Yeah.
That can't be scalable. So I'm going to talk to this person. I need money to scale my farm. And they're like, nah, the risk is too much. And then, but I'm like, what if I can solve a problem for a larger group of people, which are the farmers? So I started thinking, started talking to farmers, did a lot of questions, surveys. I mean, individually, this was before Pulus. So it was more like thinking about the concept. So I started talking to farmers. I did a lot of surveys on social media, in farmers groups. And I started, that's when I started building the narration. Okay, this is going to be something that has to be a supply chain, solve a supply chain problem. So I knew the problem. What could the solution be? Started thinking around it. And well, to cut the long story short, here I am.
Wow. Don't cut the long story short. This is what podcasts are for.
Gonna unpack.
No, so let's pull apart some of the things Okpe said here. Eunice, so the reality, and part of why I have insight into this, minimal insight, is because my parents are farmers. They're definitely not commercial. Yes, they're in their retirement and they're farming, and they live in a remote part of Zimbabwe. And the challenge with chicken and like the demand and timing the demand thing too is, if you don't time it right, you can literally within a week or two go from like potentially healthy margins on something that's taken you several months to get to, to like eroding all your margins because you keep have to keep feeding them chickens. The person who said they were coming didn't come.
That's
what I'm saying.
Exactly.
You can't, you know, you can't, you can't slaughter the lot. You don't have the refrigeration.
Exactly.
And to the point you made, fascinating point. I hadn't thought about it like that, but everybody kind of times the festive season
just for sure,
and then creates oversupply in that season, and then absolutely nothing when other people want it in the off season. How would you have processed hearing this proposition when it was first pitched to Founders Factory Africa as something we might, you know, Gen F might might work with? What kicked in terms of your sort of corporate suit sensibilities.
Ex-corporate suit sensibilities.
Yeah, but analytical. Your business analysis and venture building sensibilities.
So when we received the application from Okwe, right, it was interesting for us at first, like seeing someone trying to like solve in an unsexy market, right? Because like a lot of innovations in ag tech are usually directed at commodities or crop farmers, so to say. And then for me, right, I kind of understand that this is a problem because I am mixed as a Nigerian and Ghanaian. So I go to Ghana, my mom is Ghanaian, I go to Ghana during those periods. So I understand that yes, ag tech supply chain as a whole is really disrupted. And seeing someone that wants to solve in poultry as a white space really attracts us. Right? And for us at Venture Design, the way we kind of look at opportunities and is that we go beyond the noise in the market. We really like pinpoint that down to understand that, oh, this is a white space, right? And then what are the possibilities? If you check the numbers in terms of chicken, like Nigeria has like 70% supply deficit, right? It means that our population is over 200 million.
There's never enough chicken in the market.
There's never enough chicken. And then we have like 180 chicken annually. And the fact that a lot of these farmers, more than 80 million chicken annually. So it means that even if everybody is taking one chicken per year, which is non-nutritious, like it will still go around. Me and a chicken consumer, because I actually love chicken, I got so excited seeing that someone is trying to increase that supply for us, increase that numbers for us. And I think for me as well is also really understand like the possibilities and massive scale. So the key question was, yes, the market opportunity makes sense. Then the next thing was, what do we think about the founder rights? And the third thing is, what do we believe we can unlock for NIPS founder using tech in making this like actually venture backable? And I mean, Okwe has said a lot around our experiences, and I think that really stood out. We've got different archetypes of founders that we look out at FFA. And for us at Okwe, Okwe is like the domain expert, has done a couple of projects in AgTech, and that means that she really understands the problem. And I think what we also evaluate in the process of speaking with Okwe and throughout our experience is the fact that she's very coachable. Like, she has like this deep insight to the problem, which also makes sense that as a founder, like, it speaks a lot around execution, and she's not married to the potential solution, right? Which means she's able to think and ideate with us around what those possibilities could be. And I think the third thing,
no emotional attachment and healthy emotional attachment to them.
And I think that really makes sense. And that's something we should be telling founders. It's fine for you to be obsessed with the space you're solving, but be obsessed with the problem and not necessarily the solution, because that can be addressed from different points of view.
Yeah.
And I think for us, the third thing was really activating that support for Okwe. And one thing we thought about was that, you know, at Founders Factory Africa, we don't just apply the commercial lens. We're also very big on impact. We're part of, like, the investors on the continent that would, like, push out impact narrative. So we understand that a lot of this
commercial and impact, like how do you even unbundle that? It's like we literally need to stop thinking about those things as separate. Like, they are the same.
And I think we can have that discussion on another
topic. Yes.
And commercialization can happen, and impact can also happen, absolutely. Right? They are not like, if you chase commercialization, you can have you lose impact. Yeah. No, you can actually have both at the same time. They're an independent event. And for us, it was really understanding that a lot of poultry farmers are underserved. They are financially excluded.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Okwe just gave like a persona of someone sells chicken, you know, you won't get all of that. We understand that at the core of what she's trying to solve, it would eventually go beyond market access, because now you can move like a poultry farmer that probably started with backyard farming to scaling up to like even more than to an extensive system, and that alone is impact, you know, being able to unlock other financial products for them, credits, and also being able to, like, you know, tell that story from the products that you're building, and being able to, like, uplift a lot of people, right? And being that person, seeing the impact your products make, not just from a commercial point of view, but also seeing how you've been able to transform the life of founders. So, like, we ideally had all of this conversation, and Okwe as well went through some of our friendly but vigorous process as well, and it was also very collaborative, right? No string attached, guys.
So there's something here. So
because I have something to say
but this is actually excellent segue, because there was a question I already had about how hard it was to transition from like SME entrepreneurial thinking, which is a legitimate genre that you know, we definitely don't want to talk down to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, exactly. It's an amazing space, and I think many African entrepreneurs can and should be, you know, SME entrepreneurs.
Yes, 100%.
But you've made the decision to like transition to the tech entrepreneurship, which listening to to tech entrepreneurship and listening to Yunus, a lot of what he just said speaks to the case. If you're going to, the case you need to be committed to building, if you're going to be a tech entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So I wonder what the tensions were for you. and what does that look like? And you can give us some stories, like some war stories.
So, you know, when it comes to SME, you want to like do everything.
Uh-huh.
You probably want to like do everything. You want to be the producer, you want to be the processor, you want to be the logistics person, you want to have the cold storage.
Vertical integration.
I mean.
Yeah.
Having
because,
assets.
Exactly. So there are a lot of times when they say something like, oh, we could do this, and they're like, nah, you can't do that. It's not scalable. You want to be asset light.
Yeah.
You have to. So for me, it's been a struggle trying to get out of that SME mindset to act tech. You know, you have to understand that technology should help you to scale. You have to understand that if you carry all of this, drag all of these assets, they are going to be like burdens to drag you down. And simplify your model so that it's easy for you to reach more people. It's just easy for you to do more things, you know, convert. And it's still a process, but I'd say
that. What is the hardest lesson? What's the one where you were like, they don't get it? Eunice, I love you, but you don't get it.
I remember there was one particular session we had when I was trying to like break down the economics. You know, I'm like, oh, you see, if we do this, we'll make this margin, we'll make this amount. I mean, which in the SME settings, fantastic. Wow, we're going to make this but compared to if we do this, and Amara was like, yeah, it looks good, but on how many sales are you going to? That's not, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't look into that. I'm like, you should have seen. I just did the math.
Yeah.
This money makes sense.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, the money might make sense, but how many volumes of that can you do? Can you push using that model?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah,
what are we going to do about this? When are they going to see it? But I mean, it's so there's been that struggle. Mm. And also the fact that, yes, coming into this, it looked like I wanted to do everything. Mm. I'm like, this is the problem. This is the problem. This is the problem we can solve. And I'm like, and that's why one of the things I'll credit to the market validation exercise. You know, another thing is, yes, I know you have to talk to farmers, but how do you talk to them? What questions do you ask?
Mm.
How do you ask these questions? Mm-hmm. You know, and those are the things that, you know, I've learned in this initiative, you know, of how you have to go that out there. You test for hypotheses.
Yeah.
In during our market validation exercise, I tested for 3 hypotheses.
Mm.
And maybe in all my education, exposure and everything, I wouldn't have known that, okay, you actually have to set hypotheses.
Mm.
You have to set questions. So that's, again, go back to what I said, that you can know the problem. You can have ideas about the solution.
Yeah.
But when it comes to execution, when it comes to how do you go about it, you know, that's one thing that this program has helped with.
Maybe if I can quickly jump in here as well regarding what we mean by hypothesis in the venture design team. So technically, right, we try to take founders through the market validation process, just like Okwa said, you know, encourage founders to go out, to go speak to the potential users of their product. And hypotheses are basically like the up to 2, 3, or 4 riskiest assumption that you believe could work or might not work in the concept you're building, right?
Right.
So we guide them through the process of framing the questions, also talking them through. We've got like all resources around customer interview in a way that you ask the right questions and you don't lead your customers on, right?
You probably also don't rely too heavily on what you kind of know because of your experience.
Exactly.
Which can be a healthy bias, but it can also be a dangerous bias.
Yeah,
exactly. For example, in our case, she said something earlier around the fact that some middlemen would come aggregate the chicken, they will go, they don't pay, right? That in itself is risky. We needed to unpack that in the market validation process. Like, why exactly are off-takers not paying? Do they have like a cash flow problem? And is there a potential solution we can even build around that at scale as you continue?
So there's also another layer. You just added, oh my word, so many layers. There's also the layer of going, we don't just accept a reality, we explore the reason the reality persists.
A lot of what we do, we are always asking questions around why, from one why to another, why to another. So we unpack that fully, and then we'll bring that together to see like if there's a business there, and how we can leverage tech to optimize that process. I think in addition to, maybe this might not be Okwa's addressed reality in the process, but me as someone that work closely on policies concept, I think if you look at a lot of ag tech solution, they're usually like end-to-end supply chain. And one thing is, it could really be good, like for founders, you want to solve everything, but it was really talking through the process of around, number one, like I said, I'm always thinking around unit economics, which is something investors are big on. I mean, we've seen like the downturn. Yeah, you still optimize for growth, but you also have to balance that with fundamentals in terms of profitability. Really talking to up, well, fine, this looks good, you know, you want to carry assets, but what exactly do you believe are your cost strength you can take on in this business? And what do you believe you can outsource in terms of leveraging partnership? So the two things we really had to think about, apart from the positioning, because we needed to position this as a tech venture backable concept, and then was really thinking to distribution and unit economics, right? So like, it was really an interesting experience, even for me as a venture builder. Like, no two businesses are the same, which means we continue to wear different lens and we go through the entrepreneurial process with the founder. Even though this is founder led, really, you know, seeing ourselves as the interim co-founders, except that Okwa doesn't want to put you on a cap table.
So
we really have understanding the business.
So there may be, a slot for a phantom founder.
Yeah, we use an invisible pen. Like I said.
Okay, nah.
Gray ink at best. Maybe gray ink.
Okay, gray ink.
No, invisible ink probably suits you better.
In the end, like the venture design team would be as solid as the founder throughout the process where they are there. Like, we need to be able to think to support the founder. And also understand that we think these are the areas where the founder is actually strong. Not overlooking that, but providing like
that must be difficult, like dealing
and dragging the founder to go in the areas where, like, especially unit economics. A lot of founders don't think about that. They just want to build one to be. But what does this look like in terms of like unit economics money.
What would you say you've learned the most about yourself in terms of like your strengths and your weaknesses? Like things you, and maybe there were things you thought you were strong at and you have to work at on, or strengths that you weren't aware you had. What would you point to in terms of this process, and what is this teaching you about yourself?
Okay, let me answer this way, right? So for me, it's been, so there is a way I thought about the business coming into Genève, you know, coming this old strategy, business model. I recall that initially when I was building what Pulus should look like, it was even going to be like a subscription model and all of that. And, you know, and like I said, I wanted to solve everything. So I knew, okay, yeah. And I thought I could do everything at once. Mm. So coming into Genève, they're like, okay, this is good. It's not like, we're not saying these problems do not exist, but what is the most important thing that gives you entry into the, and you know, just not for me to forget, there's something we said the other time about chicken demand. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's, you come from Southern Africa, not South Africa. Mm-hmm. And from
thank
statistics.
Thank you. Yeah. Shout out to you, Zimbabwe. You're part of Southern Africa too.
From statistics, in Nigeria, the consumption of chicken is at 1.9 kg per head, you know, annually. Mm-hmm. South Africa is 40 kg.
Oh my word.
Yep. So it means that the average person in South Africa consumes almost 20 times chicken consumed. I mean, the first time I saw that research, I'm like, is it only chicken they eat in South Africa? But then when you even look at the global average, it's about 13.9 or so kilograms.
No, South Africans
so
do love their chicken.
So it shows that gap is, and you know, Nigeria, we've got the population, we've got the, and you know,
the
so that's part of the things that, you know, Genève has now helped to, okay, so you have this data, you have this problem, you have the solution, how does it all fit together to give you like a clear part of how you want to go about
this. To inform
this.
Your decisions.
Yes, to inform your decision. So at that point, you have to drop everything you hold on to it with little, you know, grip to be able to say, okay, I want to see this in clear lens. Mm. And sometimes it's actually even refreshing. Hear someone say, I mean, Eunice would talk about Pulus and talk about the poultry sector. And I'm, you know, and I'm like sitting down like the investor and listening like,
right,
you know, and it helps me to actually see things. Because as a founder, I mean, coming into Genève, it's all about what I say. I've been talking about this. But in Genève, you get to hear someone else who probably doesn't know much about the industry talk about it in the same light. And it gives you that clearer perspective. And
the team of FFA, when they listen to this and watch this, they're going to love this, because our dream, and certainly I should actually speak particularly about our growth team and led by Steve. They are desperate that we normalize a new generation of founders who are led by data, who embrace it as a really great way to really take the pressure off needing to bring all the charisma and the confidence you need to the table. You know, because that's important too. Yeah. I mean, it's obviously believe in yourself, leverage what you know and your sense of the market. Mm-hmm. But then embrace what data can do to inform decision making and inform how to pivot, how to set priorities, how to delimit the scope of what needs to be done today, which case you need to build.
Spot on.
It sounds like you're saying one of the biggest things you've so far gotten out of this process is you're a much more data led founder. It sounds like you're a much more data led entrepreneur.
Yeah, and also more confident about the. I was very confident about the problem, 80%. Mm-hmm. The solution, maybe like 40, in its own way. But now, it's almost as part. Yes, I know so much about the problem, but now I'm also confident about the solution and how we want to implement it.
Vision to venture.
Vision to venture.
Come on. Like, what a brilliant segue. Fam, exactly. I wish we could keep talking. The good thing is we get to work together. So I get to talk to you all the time. The rest of you need to meet these.
Anzilia, maybe people in the streets. Up, for yeah, the yeah. purpose of more people thinking about like, oh, how can I get into Gen F? What exactly is this Gen F?
I'm an ambassador, pay me.
Okay, it's an ambassador.
You've dropped all the compliments. It's too late.
She has already dropped everything. I just want to quickly like unpack that in few sentences. Yeah. So Gen F simply means Generation of Founders, and it's an entrepreneur in residence initiative that is powered by Founders Factory Africa. And the intention of this is to support early stage founders at the idea stage to help them to think around building venture backable concepts or venture backable startup. And ideally, I know you're probably thinking about like the persona or the archetypes you're looking for. We're looking for like operators.
Thank you for bringing that back up. I had that thought and I forgot to bring it back because we have you said Opay was the?
Okay, it's the domain expert.
Domain expert. Okay, so now if you're watching, here are the other archetypes. Just in case you're not a domain expert and you're counting yourself out, there are others.
No, you shouldn't, to be honest. We've got the operators. Do you have experience working in a fast-paced environment like startup, either in product, design, growth, or any of these areas? You should consider applying to Gen F today. We've also got the technical. Are you a techie? Like, do you code, write code, and all of that? Or maybe you're an academician, right? Like, it's all about, regardless of your PhD and all of your experiences in the educational sector, we do believe that we can unpack that to drive you towards thinking about startup. We've got second-time founder as well applying into the programs, and we've seen like a lot of different archetypes. And of course, if you are a woman founder across all of these archetypes, we definitely strongly encourage you to apply, just as we've taken a bet on Okme. And this is actually a concept or an initiative that is open to everybody from different parts of the continent. We've got founders from Nigeria like Okme. We've got starting founders as well in Kenya, which we are also supporting and whose faces you'll be seeing on the podcast subsequently. And we've got application from different parts of the continent, even in diaspora, right? People offshore of the continent and looking to come back to the continent to build something. And also in terms of so much more values you can unpack, Okwe had said a bit of those. We support you to think to also give you like test and learn budget up to 14,000, where you can take that to
USD.
14,000 USD.
USD.
$14,000, right?
USDZ.
For you to test your idea and then also tap into the pool of experts at Founders Factory Africa, even beyond venture design.
People
and then,
like, but not exclusively.
People like me, we've got like a large studio team as well, and like the larger team of FFA as a whole that are actively there to support you and
investment
help you
support,
catalyze that next thing you're
looking
to.
Venture building support specialists of all stripes,
that are there trying to help you to unpack that thing you looking to be. And post the 3 months, I mean, we optimize doing our engagement with you to get you like the best fit into getting a yes at our investment committee, because we do understand what venture backable means. We understand the requirements and then what could catalyze you into getting a yes. So please visit our website at Founders Factory Africa today and consider applying to Gen F right now.
Who's paying you?
I think I want to say something in addition to that. I think there's been a lot of, say on X or Twitter, formerly Twitter, and there's a lot of hype about, you want to get into an accelerator. But I think founders should like try to, take a breath and see, really, accelerators are not for everybody. I've applied to a lot of accelerators and I'm wondering, coming into the Gen F, I see like the venture design is actually what I really needed. Maybe if I'd gotten into an accelerator, it would have been cool, But then it might have been, but it was really like what I really needed. And a lot of founders should think more like this. I don't know how many venture design programs are available to African or Nigerian founders. Mm-hmm. But
not as many as they should be. By the way, we're not even out here trying to say we should be the only ones.
We need more people to start thinking around like venture building initiatives, like the venture studios.
Yes.
I think that when you think around like active support, being able to find someone sit side by side with you and provide that hands-on and personalized support.
Yeah.
I mean, you would find lots of those at Founders Factory Africa and previously as well, we build concepts and we give it to founders. This Gen F is an entrepreneur in residence initiative. It is founder led, not an accelerator or incubator, but a venture building support.
So, I mean, that's an excellent point, because there's a version of this business that would not exist if you hadn't decided to turn everything you've brought to bear in your experience so far and channel it into a tech entrepreneurship journey. Yeah. And so we need to make that really clear. There's a version of this that demands that we tap into that entrepreneurial energy, unleash it, and rather than, you know, look inwards. We really do need to collaborate and make things happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I would say too, we started earlier by saying this is the very room you pitched. We legit don't know whether or not you will be inducted into our portfolio and land your first check with us. And I know some of you cynics out there will say, oh, they know, we have no idea, fam.
No.
So here's hoping you...
We're praying.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. But if there's something I'm pretty sure about is that we're doing everything to optimize the chances, because we've supported Okwe, and regardless, Okwe is that founder that is actively driven. Okwe is going to go out to push this business. So maybe I would focus less of my time talking about, oh, is it a yes, is it a no, and focus more on asking you to watch out for Pulu's, because she's going to be in your faces out there.
And her chicken on your plate.
Yeah.
Okay. A chicken she has enabled to get on your plate.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. There's nothing left to be said except to say thank you to you, Okwe.
Thank
a
you,
big Andrew. Shout out to you. Thank you so much for letting us be part of your story.
Thank you.
Eunice.
Thank you so much as you're well, Okwe.
Thank you for forsaking the thank you for forsaking the suits.
Okay. I say a big thank you to myself as well.
This is a gift to
I have grown so much in this entrepreneurship, and I also believe there are a lot of goals. Really thank myself and the fact that I made the right decision.
And I thank you, Eunice.
I will thank you.
Well.
Thank you for making me your interim co-founder, but I still need to get on the cap table.
He's begging. All right. No, seriously. This has been the Not So Secret Sauce. My name is Andile Masugu. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Cheers.